Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti, and today we're talking about ARSAD, the Advanced Research Seminar on Audio Description, the 2019 edition, taking place in Barcelona from March 19th to the 20th. We're going to have the opportunity to chat with the speakers of the conference, as Fred is media partner again of the event. And today we're company of Eva Espasa. So welcome, Eva. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you.
So Eva, you're a senior lecturer at the University of Vic Central, University of Catalonia, and many more things.
Yes, yes, yes. I've been working there from 1995. Yes.
So first of all, could you tell us more about yourself? Who's Eva Espasa?
Well, I'm a lecturer at a center on translation at a university which offers translation studies, and it is in that connection that audio description as well as subtitling for the deaf and hard of hearing was included in our teaching courses and also in research. But this is also connected to my research. I'm leading a group on audiovisual translation research and also on communication. It tries to bring together the fields of audiovisual translation and communication. And I'm also researching into gender studies in connection with, especially with the media, and including among the media, not just, for example, films, but also theater, which I've worked also on theater translation.
How did you become interested in accessibility? How did you end up working on this field?
Yeah, on the one hand, it came as a kind of connection. I mean, translation studies opened up its field into accessibility questions as from the turn of the century, as it were. And it was in part a research demand, also a teaching demand. But then when I look back at my own experience, then I remember that my father, who was sighted, he was sighted a teacher for blind users of incipient Teflon technologies in the 80s. So on the one hand, I sight translated for my father on his teaching materials, and then I informally got involved in the Spanish Organization of the Blind in Barcelona, I mean, watching films which still were not audio described, but seeing how he was teaching those old technologies of converting, for example, text, printed text, into tactile impressions. So there was that personal thing, and then also the university thing. And also, well, another thing is that at our university, because of the size of the University of Vic, which is a medium to small university, it's very easy to connect with people from different fields. So we all worked with the notions of accessibility or inclusive education or personal autonomy from the different faculties at the university, and organized some colloquiums on that to see the perspectives of different fields.
At this year's ARSAD, you're presenting, your abstract is on the audio description of blindness in films, visual pleasures or blind nightmares. And you're quoting Georgina Cleage and her work condensed in the book Blind Nightmares, Sight Unseen of 1999. Could you tell us more about this presentation and this focus this year?
Yes, first to start with Georgina Cleage. I was reading Georgina Cleage long time ago, related to another project, which was a documentary to blind women. And with the connection we had with them, they mentioned Georgina Cleage and started reading her. And when I read her chapter on this and on her experiences as a legally blind woman, watching films portraying stereotypical visions of blindness, and seeing that, I mean, she was wondering how these films would be audio described. This was the spark of our research, a research that is done jointly with my colleague Montse Curríus, who mm-hmm. works with me in this project. So this was the spark. If we read Georgina Klitsch, she focuses on films which show very strong stereotypes on blindness. Then we started examining those films, but then after having looked at them, and then also at some more recent films, we decided in the end for this presentation to focus on more recent films where, one, there's not such a stereotypical vision of blindness, and second, films that have been audio described, either in English or in Spanish, or in both. Because if we compare those different audio descriptions, then we have an idea of the diversity and the challenges that audio describing blindness can involve.
What are the films that you analyzed more? Are there some strong examples?
Yes, we decided, I mean, for just given the scope of the conference, yes. We decided to look, for example, at Dancer in the Dark, mm-hmm. Which is, being a Lars von Trier film, it's always controversial, mm-hmm. but it's interesting how it has been audio described. Then we also look at Almodóvar Broken Embraces. Mm-hmm. Then we also look at Radiance or Hikari by Naomi Kawase. And also Notes on Blindness, right? And even there's another film which is more mainstream, which I'm trying to look for the English title because in Spanish it's Hacia la Luz. Bird Box, which is a science fiction thriller. This is more standard, but in the curious thing about this film is that here blindness is not so much as a burden, but as a tool for survivor in that kind of a thriller. But in the other film, for example, in Notes on Blindness, I mean, the title itself tells us how blindness is thematized. Or, for example, Radiance. I mean, not just blindness, but audio description is thematized. Hmm. And it's very important in how this is being described when it is central. So it's a challenge for describers how to treat this and to show also the different views, for example, from sighted versus blind viewers, which the audio description as a layer and added onto the film can show different experiences, but also the differences between sighted viewers as seen by what the describers of the different versions are focusing on, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another thing that interested me when I read the abstract is that you're also pointing out that gender analysis have pointed at different depictions of male and female blind characters. There's also a stereotype there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, then this was done taking into account Georgina Klitsch's studies. And the good thing is that in these newer films, those stereotypes are not working so much.
Perfect.
In all the films, I mean, blind characters, for example, do not work. They just live on the air or on some pension, but it's not mentioned. They are not protagonists. And they are either asexual or hypersexual, but sex is shown off screen. But in the films we analyzed, I mean, the main characters are blind, right? So at least they are not left aside blind characters. There's not so much emphasis on those extrasensory perceptions as in older stereotype films, even though there is strong importance, for example, of music, as, for example, Dancer in the Dark and the way it's treated, or in the way the films are made and also the descriptions are made. all the senses are mentioned as a kind of reflection on how the films are made. For example, it was very useful to have the audio description and the audio introduction of Luis Fryer, who is also a speaker at ARSA.
Yes.
Was the describer of Notes on Blindness. In her audio introduction, she mentioned some of the criteria for her description, and she includes, I mean, she dialogues very well with the film composition and how blindness is presented or sight in the references to other senses or in references to the natural world, and how the some views are blurred because with the presence of steam on windows, on rain, and the chiaroscuro effect, as it were, with silhouettes, mm-hmm. etc. So it's very interesting to have both those descriptions and also the describers' comments on this through their audio introductions. There's with Monse, we created a very simple but important for us a documentary on women, blind women in Catalonia.
Hmm.
This turned in a presentation and at ARSAT, but it was difficult to present at that environment because the documentary itself had been done in Catalan, and so far it has only been described and subtitled in Catalan. But for us, it was a very enriching experience. I mean, we wanted to see whether, I mean, the conjunction of women and blindness, I mean, if there was an added, different experience, as it were, or if, if women felt that the experience as a blind user was the same, as it were, to men.
That's very interesting. And what did you find out?
Well, it's very curious. I mean, it was very difficult, as it were, to frame the question, as you know from your experience. And if you ask them, I mean, do you feel different, as it were, from being blind and being a woman? And the replies on sometimes they said that they were very curious and, of course, very difficult to generalize just from the experiences of six, seven women. But sometimes they said, you know, I feel discriminated on as a blind person on the one hand, as a woman on the other. They felt that discrimination, for example, were different. And for example, in work interviews, they said that blindness came first, right? And if they were interviewed and they didn't mention at first that they were blinded, they noted that when they arrived at their job interview with a white cane or whatever, they immediately realized that they wouldn't get the job, right? So, and on the other hand, as women, you know, having the typical question, will you have to know whatever? They saw them as separate. So sometimes, I mean, to have a more a nuanced view or different view, we asked them, depending on how they had worked with that, we asked those who were teachers, we asked them about the connection between inclusive education and women, and then the focus was more on inclusive education than on women. And on the other, with a blind woman who was also a sportswoman who had taken part in a campaign against domestic violence, and we asked her of her experience, and her answer was more that she wanted to make visible sports, elite sports, or the presence of blind or disability in elite sports. She was a gold medal in the Paralympics, than that of the women experience. Because when we asked her about violence, domestic violence towards blind women, that according to the institution she worked with was more frequent in blind users, her answer was very resilient. She said, well, there can be victims as well as perpetrators, because it was the time when Oscar Pistorius, I think, had committed that crime, that Paralympic athlete.
Sí.
So And I read her response, that her really resilient response of a view of empowering blinded people as normal, quote, inverted quotes, instead of against a vision of victimization of the blind people. So I could understand why she was so assertive, as it were. So it was very difficult to generalize, but it was enriching anyway, I mean, from that experience, I mean, looking at their views. And the one thing was that they all worked. We were trying to find blind women who did not work, and they all worked or had work. Well, some people were just already pensioners, because I mean they were old. So it's so we had it was a very enriching experience.
The feeling is that this research is only at a starting point. I mean, there are so many things to you that you could like get deeper into.
Yes. I mean, and when we look back, for example, at the documentary, we would like to go on with this. Now it's because of our problems with funds and the time we have for institutional pressures. We had some money to start this project, but then because of institutional changes, then we had to concentrate on other things. And that's why then we moved into the present project. But and I think, I mean, in the asset thing, the gender thing is provisionally left apart from the examination of these more recent films. But I work also with another colleague who is into gender and film. And we still have to go on with examining those more visual pleasures from the gender perspective. So it's there. It's waiting for us to have the time and the funding to do some more solid research on this.
I really hope so, and I hope to talk to you about that in the future. I'm very interested in that. I think that now is the right time to finally talk about these things, because we're slowly changing, but yes, it's a slow change, so we have to talk about it, and maybe we will shape a different future. I mean, I'm positive.
I hope so, and we can find ways of collaborating in this. Okay.
How much you were mentioning how, you know, the stereotypes are always less and less, so that the situation is improving, is getting better. What are the let's say the things that you can do to increase this change even more, especially with your work? You teach online AD training, so you train people online. So how much have you changed your way of teaching AD in considering this research you did?
Well, actually, I mean, when always analyzing those films for research, then I make also notes for students. I mean, to look at those films, and then I think from this experience in this research, looking across very different descriptions, it will be very interesting to choose specific examples for students to look at them and see how these different views are created. And also, because I mean, of this specific online teaching environment, sometimes it's difficult to know exactly all the experience students have, what they know about blindness, for example. And sometimes there's one first stereotype we have to break is that of the romanticizing or exoticizing the blind people's experience. And we work with this, well, looking at different films. And also, I mean, for example, we just break the ground, as it were, asking students to introduce themselves with an, as it were, a kind of a audio description of sorts, which is written out in the campus. And then this is not a right or wrong exercise, but points out many of the features that people initially focus on what they describe about themselves, on what they would like to know about their fellow companions, etc. And then we compared them. And also, for example, we asked them to just listening to some the sound of a short film, which is not audio described, to try and guess what should be audio described, in a way mimicking the ideal situation of having blind and sighted describers working together. But the first stereotype we have to break is that of having to describe everything, because blind people have a very strong culture, or filming culture, sound culture, etc., which makes them identify sounds more easily than for us. So one thing is to avoid this patronizing attitude through this exercise.
Yeah, it might get annoying.
Patronizing sometimes, yeah. I mean, going over the board. And an exercise I offer, and it's, of course, open to the people's social networks, is asking them to work with people with visually impaired people to compare their own reflections on those films and those of the visually impaired people. And these impressions are shared in the group via forums in online settings. And it's very interesting, I mean, to have the really sound responses from the visually impaired users, who tell us much of what and how things should be described. And another thing that has helped, I mean, in the latest years, is that we have more and more available audio descriptions for people. In the past, at least in Spain, audio descriptions were mainly available only for the people affiliated to the National Organization for the Blind. But now, with the introduction of apps where you have the sound of the descriptions, these are available for everybody, and even the describers themselves have made some of their old work available in some platforms online. So now, finally, there's more access to many more audio descriptions, so that students have more really professional descriptions which they can listen and compare to have a really more, I would say, professional experience on what it is. Because in the past, you only found really available for everybody only some amateur descriptions or some excerpts, some proofs, but not actually whole films, which are now available, and it really has helped.
At your SAD 2013, you talked about specificity of online training AD students, as you were now discussing and describing. And so you're coming back this year. Why are SAD? How useful is it for your work?
Well, it's really useful on many different levels. I mean, it's our meeting for reference. I mean, exchanging experiences in research and also in training, which is being the focus of their project at Lab Pro, and really to see how even how professional trends are changing from the first day when objectivity was the norm. And there was that idea that, for example, filming language was difficult to include in descriptions, to really more nuanced views on other description through the reflection on professional practices, through really sound research projects, exchanging views with users. And I think, it's our point of references every 2 years to meet and discuss things. And one thing that I think has is now more visible, as it were, in ARSAT, is the voice and the presence of visually impaired users, which in the first years maybe it wasn't so present, but now there are more visually impaired users and professionals who, you know, give us very sound experiences and very critical experiences of their own experiences as both users and professionals and researchers. So it's really a very good point for connections among international experiences.
When I went to the Arsad, I have to say that I was really hit and moved by the feeling, the network feeling, but also the feeling that you're all working passionately for something. Mm-hmm. It's a very strong group of people sharing the same passion and even being open to criticism, to getting better and better, researching. That was the feeling. I don't know if you share it.
Yes, I think, passion. I mean, passion would be a very precise word to describe it. And also empathy, I mm-hmm. would say that. I mean, there's empathy with different views on every level. Experiences, being viewers' experiences, being professional experiences, research experiences, etc. And it's also nice to see different research careers. I mean, you can see both people who are starting their PhD project, for example, and see how these are evolving throughout the years. You can have the experiences of really solid research projects. You have people who have recently been involved with audio description through their master thesis, and professional experiences from all over the world. So it's really rich and a passionate and empathic view on description. Yeah,
I love that. Eva, thank you so much for talking to us about your work, your presentation at this year's Arsad, and good luck to you and Mount Secorius, who you're presenting your abstract with, the audio description of blindness in films, visual pleasures on blind nightmares.
Okay, thank you very much.
And we've been talking to Eva Espasa, senior lecturer at University of Vic Central, University of Catalonia, who with Montse Corius will present at the ARSAD, the Advanced Research Seminar on Audio Description, Air Abstract, the Audio Description of Blindness in Films, Visual Pleasures or Blind Nightmares. And this is Chiara Nicoletti for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio,
24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.